Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Lou Padgett, the author of 5 books, and you can read more about her at Lou, L-O-U, Padgett, P-A-G-E-T.com. She's a frequent guest because she always delivers information about sexuality and relationships with a lot of accuracy and so much fun. Welcome to this program, Lou. It's so nice to have you back.
Well, thank you, my dear.
And it was your idea, and I like the idea so much. We're going to talk about sex in the news. Who got it right? Who got it wrong? And are you kidding me? That's a great line, Lou. You know, of course, I always appreciate you, and we've been friends, maybe 12 years now, and colleagues, and you're on my show really a lot, but it's been a little too long. You were on last summer, and so I'm really glad you're back.
My pleasure.
Good. So you wrote to me, and you said the last 2 weeks, maybe even plus, have had some really impactful reports and articles on sexuality in the media. So where do you want to start today? Because there's so much here.
Well, you know, just, I mean, I had sent you a couple of other things even since we spoke,
yes,
you know,
I
at
know,
1 o'clock.
And I copied them out, and my goodness, you want to start with one of those?
Sure.
I mean, the one that was really touching is the Mormon mom who fought for Prop 8 now fights for her gay son.
I know that. And, you know, Prop 8 is where they wanted to turn back in the state of California the ability for same-sex couples to marry.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a Mormon mother. She is, I believe she's 35. She has 6 children, 37.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not. And all of a sudden, when she realized that her 14-year-old son was considering contemplating suicide. And for Mormons, as anyone knows, they have a very strong family. You're going to be here for forever on this plane, and in the next plane, you are together for eternity.
Right.
And when she realized, as a result of having read something that her son had written, that this is what was going on, she realized, I need to find something. She couldn't find anything until finally she found a group called a 20-minute piece produced by the Family Acceptance Project at San Francisco State University, which, as we know, you and I,
yes,
as colleagues know, has a very strong sexual health department.
Yes.
And the one statement in here that when she talks about her husband and her sitting with their son and saying, you know, are you
struggling?
Struggling with something, and he just, you know, lost it. But the thing that touched me so much is when the father was talking about, I need to find some purpose for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm just trying to find his one comment that, to me, totally, you know, captured. She, you know, her husband, this is Tom Montgomery speaking, his father speaking, you can't just leave some void for a young child to think, God doesn't have a plan for me anymore.
Yes.
Tom Montgomery says in the documentary, I need to fill him with purpose and give him, show him, this is not the end of the world, this is the beginning of your world.
And the son said, I was mortified at the idea of being disowned by my parents. So for his parents to understand and get on board and be so proactive, they're making a huge difference in this boy's life. And the article that you sent me ended with a quote from the mother, and it's beautiful. I'm a better person for having a gay son. I love differently, and I love more openly. I didn't realize the judgment I had before I realized that having a gay son was a great blessing and not a burden. Imagine the distance that woman came from in the course of, it looks like, a few months.
Well, she said, you know, she became a master researcher.
Yes.
And I look at this and I say, you know, it takes, we say often in our area of sexuality and in any area of our lives,
mm-hmm.
it takes one person. And
exactly.
each person is that you impact one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And this for me was
That's a good point, Lou.
Fabulous mm-hmm. article. So it was,
mm-hmm.
Good Morning News, and it was on Good Morning America on Yahoo News, if anyone wants to see it. Mormon mom who fought for Prop 8 now fights for gay son.
And the mother, Wendy Montgomery, went back to Scripture, and this will tie in very well when we talk about Exodus being overturned. So
mm-hmm.
we'll get to that maybe just shortly.
Mm-hmm.
But she found out, or she said, Christ's most basic commandments were love God and love your neighbor. And if you're not loving your gay son or your gay friends or whatever, this is not following God.
Well, you know, and many of the, I think I've told you that I volunteer with Children of the Night, which is an organization
yes,
here created.
You've done that quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lois Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these children are referred to as throwaway children.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they come from families or backgrounds that when they come out and say that they are gay or that they are transgender or
mm-hmm.
they are literally thrown aside. They're thrown out.
And
then they have to go to survival sex on the
mm-hmm.
street.
Mm-hmm.
And where I see this is when they get told, you know what, you are okay. Here is, and this place, Children of the Night was created, A, to rescue them off the streets from prostitution and to give them a home that children need. Children need to be in a home, going to school, having good health care, meals. That's what children are there for. Children are there to provide and to create a future.
That's right. And they need to be protected.
And when she made the comment about here, you know, there isn't something about here was this innocent, pure child, which she saw as her son.
Yeah.
And she said, how could that be that there was something wrong with him?
Yes. And then when she turned to the medical community, she learned that homosexuality was not a choice, but an identity. And you and I, in a previous conversation off the air, talked about a mutual friend and colleague of ours, Dr. Jules Black, who's he's a gynecologist from Australia who is a sex educator and prominent in our field. And you recalled that in 2001, when we were all in Paris
mm-hmm.
for the World Congress of Sexology, that Jules Black talked about it happens in utero. And, of course, those of us who are more enlightened know that. But I think you said that was the first time you'd heard about it was
right.
from
and,
Jules Black.
And you know what I did
mm-hmm.
between our having our conversation at 1 o'clock and right now?
Yep.
I emailed Jules, and he got back to me.
Oh, good for Jules.
And he
said, the time difference, what is it? I don't know.
About 13 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, because he's in Australia,
yeah,
15 or 18 hours, whatever it is, and he emailed right back straight away, and he said to give you, you know, a big hug.
Give me a hug. Oh, that's good. I love Jules. We all love Jules.
He's such a doll. And what he commented on, and he sent me the information from the actual researcher,
mm-hmm.
and the gentleman's name is Professor Gunther Dorner, and what the study was, like the chances are, and as Jules says, they've not been able to replicate his test results, and here's probably why.
Mm.
He studied the brains of gay individuals who, in the span of 7 years before World War II,
yes,
during the 7 years of World War II, and 7 years after World yes. War II.
Yes.
And found that the incidence of homosexuality was higher in the World War II group. And he attributed this to the German women, because it was the incidence of homosexual men in East Germany.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Gunther was a highly respected East German neuroendocrinologist.
Mm-hmm.
And what he looked at was that he attributed it to these women being under such huge stress. In World War II.
Yes, I recall the study. It's fascinating.
And so,
yeah,
you know,
could you replicate those circumstances?
Right, you know, have we had another, you know, culture or another society that has been under that much constant stress for 7 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No. But what he also did is he did more, publication. So I just thought, bless Jules. It's just so great.
I'm going to write to him and encourage him to listen to the archived version.
Well, they're leaving right now, like tomorrow morning.
Oh.
For the U.S. But he will be able to be online. But he did get that information to us for today. Isn't that great? Love that.
That's great. I'm also going to ask him to be on this program if he can when he's in the U.S. I don't think Progressive Radio Network wants to pay for Australia connection. But anyway.
But you know. Now,
yes.
And here's another one that I think I mentioned to you from.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the 19th, so just last week. And it was that in India, couples who have premarital sex are to be considered married. Now, here's the backstory, and this is what I want people to realize. When I'm looking at these headlines that are being put out in whatever media, whether it is print, whether it is social, whether it is online, really what you have to do is you have to be a shrewd consumer and you have to dig underneath and see really what is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And what this was this is a case of a couple who had never formally been married, but she sued her former live-in boyfriend of 5 years to pay child support for their two children.
Mm-hmm.
And the lower court had ruled that she was not owed any money because there was no documentary evidence of a legal marriage.
Mm-hmm.
However, going further up the food chain, the gentleman who was the Madras High Court judge said, listen, if you are of legal age, choose to indulge in sexual gratification, this act would confirm the relationship as a marriage. So he overturned the ruling and stated that sexual relationship was tantamount to being wed. Now, I think what he's actually saying is, listen, lamb chop, don't you dare think you can go and have this and not have to be responsible for these children. You were acting as if you were in a marriage.
Oh, good.
And that would be my comment on
lamb
that.
Chop. Listen, lamb chop with curry.
A little delivery there.
You know, that's very good because India certainly has its share of problems from a sexual standpoint. And some people are calling it the rape capital of the world.
Well, you know, I mean, Guyana, if we're going to be talking about that form of behavior, then we better start, instead of, you know, turning around and pointing fingers somewhere, I think we better start looking here at what's happening on college campuses.
Well,
and
that's
within
true.
And within the military. And, you know, and it's now we finally have things, people are talking about these things more. But, I mean, here we have Angelina Jolie, who mm-hmm. basically stood in front of the UN and said, what is the matter with you that you are not putting this on the agenda? The intimidation rape within Syria, within all these refugee camps, that is rampant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Within a culture where women, that is one, you know, their body is one of their only soul temples that they have a form of, you know, dominion over. So
well,
I think,
and even among certain couples, just to do a little side bar here, I work with couples where the woman feels so diminished in the relationship. And the only power she feels like she has is over her body, so she withdraws sex.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, that's how we can bring it down to just couples in the U.S. even. But, it's a huge global problem. You're a sex educator. I am at times, not to the extent that you are, because you have, well, it's in a different way. I often do sex ed with my with my clients doing couples therapy and so on, but you have these books that are so wonderful. Just run down your books again for our listening audience.
My first book is How to Be a Great Lover.
Yep.
And just to let people know, they are based on a seminar series that I do nationally and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So my ladies seminar, which is ladies only, mm-hmm. is my first book, and they're illustrated step by step with very simple to follow line drawing
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
on the manual and oral techniques and the different positions.
Mm-hmm.
My second book, How to Give Her Absolute Pleasure, mm-hmm. is from the men's seminar, which came straight out of the ladies seminar because the men said, listen, if you're doing it for women, you got to do it for us. And I was like, okay,
mm-hmm.
being the entrepreneur that I am.
Well, then, and also that you embrace stuff, and it makes you, that's part of your charm. You're engaging, and you are inclusive, and you have no fear. You just go forward.
Sometimes.
And you're open.
This is true.
And you know, with sexuality experts, you have to be open and non-judgmental.
Well, and we'd like to have that as the ideal template for mm-hmm. someone who is in this field. Yet you and I both know that sometimes there are people that do have, you know, definite agendas of which they wish to present on. The reason I got into this, Diana, and you and I have had this conversation many times,
mm-hmm.
I have the hard sciences background, and I saw absolutely that people were not being told the truth.
Right.
And my thing was not to go into the area of sexuality, but it made me so nuts that people were being bullied by someone else acting like they had all the information. When myself, as a general sciences major, I knew they were full of it. And I was like, this is not okay. Why are people, and I was totally sideways pissed off. And you know what's interesting? Do you know who Megan Andalou is?
No, I don't.
She is a great college circuit educator. She has a terrific sexuality, health, and education project that she has set up in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And she herself said the same thing. She said the reason she started doing it is because she was so furious. And it was just that she was like, someone said, well, you can't be doing that. And she was like this, you want a bet?
At the end of the program, I cut you off, so we'll talk about your books. We'll review them again. But mm-hmm. I think this hard science background is a pretty good segue into talking about Michael Douglas's comment, which has been in the news just recently, I got oral sex from cunnilingus,
mm-hmm.
and you say, oh, really? And then we're also going to talk about the HPV vaccine because, about science, you have stuff to say about that with a scientific background.
Yes, I do. Here's the first thing I want people to know is that, listen, look at the information on the Internet, particularly in the area of sexuality, and then start doing your homework. Don't assume just because, and here's the thing that happens, just because something's in print, people often think, well, I saw it, blah, blah, blah. I got given some phenomenal coaching and mentoring advice by Dr. Beverly Whipple, who when I first was coming into this field, she said, Lou, don't you ever take someone else's information from an article as that is, you know, the gospel truth. You have got to go in
mm-hmm.
and look at the actual article yourself. Look
yes.
at the actual paper.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are talking about, here's the thing about human papillomavirus. You have to understand a little bit of the science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
There's human papillomavirus. There's equine, so there's stuff for horses. There's bovine for cattle. There's canine
uh-huh.
for dogs. There's feline for cats. There's some for birds. There's avian. There are all kinds of different papillomaviruses.
Mm-hmm.
For humans, there's 100-plus different types of human papillomavirus. Some create planter warts. Some create other things, but they impact the squamous cell area. They impact the skin,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
they are often as a result of contact.
Mm-hmm.
So
sexual contact.
Sometimes it is not sexual contact.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not. Sometimes it is just skin to skin contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so like plantar warts on your feet. What are you doing with your feet? Well, some people do things with their feet, but for most people, no.
But my understanding is that the warts on your feet cannot translate to genital warts.
Correct. Here's the other thing. You have 100 different types, and thank you for stating that. There are 100 different types of human papillomavirus. There are a number that are, note the term I'm going to use, associated, not causative, of particular wart areas. So genital condyloma, genital warts, is a completely different type of HPV than the HPV that is associated with cervical cancer.
Yeah.
Now, let's go to Michael Douglas's comment. He was being actually asked in a British interview. The interviewer was asking him if he felt that some of his previous life choices, meaning the amount that he was drinking and the fact that he smoked, might have been a contributing factor to his having had oral throat cancer. Now, he was just coming off the promotional material for the Liberace behind the chandelier.
Right.
Then, and he said, oh, no, it had nothing to do with me. It had to do with some unknown woman who, you know, it was cunnilingus. Well, my first thought was, excuse me, and let's take a little responsibility for our own life choices here.
Well, yes, and the easiest thing to do for people.
Right, is to say, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
And not to take responsibility.
Right,
and,
right. So, but here's the other thing. I'm going to go to the research information from Dr. Dr. Diane Harper.
Right.
And she is one of the top researchers and first researchers in the area for the human papillomavirus vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccine that is, one is called Gardasil, and that is a Merck product, and the other is Cervarix, like cervix, Cervarix. And that is a GlaxoSmithKline product out of the UK.
And both pharmaceutical companies are huge.
They're massive. Now, when they first started with this, I also tell people, look, it's time for people to start being smarter about things and not just be sold down the river.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these vaccines were marketed with a huge fear campaign. And what they were doing is they were targeting young women who were pre-sexual. They were targeting girls who were like 9 to like 13 to have vaccinations so that they did not contract cervical cancer. Now, before we have everyone have complete brain grenades over the fact that we've said children, sex, and cancer, which
in
is
the
what
same
they
sentence,
knew
yes.
would happen, you need to look at who is most likely to have a diagnosis of cervical cancer. Go to the National Institutes of Health website, go to the CDC website, and you will find the data that states the average age of diagnosis for cervical cancer is a woman who is 47. And it is highly, highly overrepresented in immigrant populations, meaning women who do not have access to typically good health care, and they do not have their own sexual agency. They typically are more reticent. They are listening more to a more male-dominated culture.
Right.
And here's the other thing about it. Dr. Harper herself stated, now she was one of the lead researchers on this, and her information actually, when I was, where I got this from, is directly from her presentation at the fourth public conference on vaccination. It happened to have been in October 2009 in Reston, Virginia. And she was looking at that her presentation was on, you know, Gardasil vaccine. Is it informed consent? And she stated specifically, there is nothing that is a better preventative for cervical cancer than the pap smear. So screening, is her comment, is there's nothing that is more effective than screening for cervical cancer. So why I brought up the Michael Douglas thing is there was also an additional article last week on HPV vaccine cuts infection by half in teen girls.
I did see that article.
Yeah, so what I looked at is it said that they also talked about herd immunity, which is absolute crap. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to read something about vaccines and having vaccine choice, because really what we're talking about here, Diana, is choice. The ability to make an informed choice.
Right.
And to me, someone stabbing something into the arm of a 9-year-old or 11-year-old or a 13-year-old girl who is not sexually active and telling them that we're going to protect you from cervical cancer. First off, Dr. Harper herself said, we do not know how long this might be good for, how, you know, the immunity it might bring in. What she also said is, you know, you're having these injections. I, myself, I call into question what is in vaccines. I think if you do a little thinking and a little looking, you are going to be shocked at what is in them. And there's a book called Saying No to Vaccines. It's by Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. She's one of the foremost vaccine choice physicians in this country. And people were saying to me, if I had a daughter, would I have her have Gardasil shots? After having done, you know, looked at the work that Dr. Tenpenny has done and my own background research and listening to Dr. Diane Harper, across the board, my answer is unequivocally no. Absolutely no. Here's the other thing you look at. Follow the money, honey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Merck itself had a number of their patent-protected products falling off what they call their patent cliff. They were no longer protected. Things were going to be coming in as generics. So what do you think Merck was looking to do? They were trying to build up another billion-dollar baby. And how better to do that than to go after young children, say it's about sex, say it's about cancer, and alarm everyone. And the majority of those first ads were all about hitting the panic feeling button, which is the subconscious mind, which you don't have a lot of control over. And if people looked at the severe adverse events reports that are coming back from these vaccines, it would chill you. Chill you.
Lou, we have so much to cover. And before
I know.
Before we go to the break, let's at least introduce the subject of the collapse of Exodus International. This is
okay.
The ex-gay organization that claimed through reparative therapy people could be cured of homosexuality. So let's just talk for about a minute and a half before the break. You talk about that, and then we'll continue the conversation after the break.
Okay.
Oh, and I want to say, too, if anybody wants to join this conversation, if you have a point of view, a question, please call 888-874-4888. Go, Lou.
Okay.
Exodus.
So, what happened is that I was, and I've been reading for a number of years, of the ex-gay therapy program that has supposedly tells people that by virtue of being, you know, having a close relationship with God and doing a number of things, you can basically cure yourself of being gay.
Prayer is one of the things.
Yeah, I was going to say meditation.
Okay. But the churches would say prayer.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what I, probably a month and a half ago, I happened to be reading an article online with, and I was, it was the, the gentleman by the name of John Paulk, P-A-U-L-K,
mm-hmm.
And he was one of the, he was like the poster child for the ex-gay movement. And he finally came out, and this happened to have been the 1st of May, and he was the former chairman of Exodus and co-author of the book Love One Out with his wife, who had previously been a lesbian. And he said he could no longer support the ex-gay movement or efforts to attempt to change individuals, especially teens who already feel insecure and alienated. So what I'd known is Greg Polk had previously been caught numerous times coming out of gay bars and saying, I tripped into this bar and I didn't realize it was a gay bar in New York. I'm sorry, the BS button just got hit really hard here. But what I also wanted to say is that Dr. Winston Wild was my guest on the 1st of May, and what he talked about is, in California, finally, 4 registered therapists, they are no longer allowed to use reparative therapy on adolescents.
Good.
Now,
and
finally.
And, yes.
But
and,
here's
well,
the
we
thing.
Have to go to the break. But
okay.
The best quote from Winston Wild, who's our mutual friend, is reparative therapy is neither.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll continue this conversation, Lou, because it's, I think, quite fascinating. I'm certain our listeners will think it is, too. Stay with us.
Okay.
Cosa leggerai? Con che libro affascini il tuo cuore? E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore?
We're back. Dr. Diana Wiley, and we're talking today with Lou Padgett, the author of many books. And as I understand it from Greg, our wonderful producer, we have a caller, Amy, on the line. And as I understand it, Amy, you are a Christian with a more, you've been following this Exodus international collapse, and you have a view that some of your fellow Christians might not have.
I'm actually quite glad that they've decided to fold. I'm a little worried because they're starting another ministry. It sounds like it's basically the same thing, just with a different name. But I'm glad it stopped. They've just done so much damage to so many families and you know, the Christians who want to do the right thing, and they just end up hating themselves, which is it's very sad.
And also believing that they're not accepted or loved by God.
Yeah,
the damage there is huge for believers.
Right. Yeah. May I ask, Amy, what had you get interested in this?
A lot of things. Well, my dad is gay, and for
a
lot of years,
a struggle to come out.
It was a very damaging situation for the entire family. So, I mean, for many years, I absolutely hated gay people. Kind of like a Paul experience, you know, persecuting Christians and wanting to kill them. I didn't want to kill gay people, but I was very much on the same agenda as, you know, ex-gay ministries, thinking, oh, you know, these people, they're choosing this lifestyle and stuff, because I was very angry with my father for what he had done. And I've just had a real change, you know, just listening to the hearts of people and listening to the struggles. I came to realize there's no way that this is a choice that anybody would make, especially if you look at the comments on any kind of a gay article anywhere, you know. So I really feel like God has changed my heart to really just love gay people where they are, and, you know, not require any kind of change whatsoever, because they're loved by him just as much as I am.
And how has that changed your relationship with your father?
My relationship with my father changed after my mother died. And so I loved him. I just didn't like his partner. And, you know, I was very insecure with all of that. But now it's more, I have this great relationship with my dad. And, you know, his partner is one of the nicest people. And he's actually made my father into a human being, which is pretty great. So, you know, it really has helped. And this, you know, changed me too. It just made it even better. Like, I was really sad when my dad came to visit, and he had married his partner 3 years ago, and he hadn't told me. And so my husband and I made it a point to take them out to a nice steakhouse and, you know, celebrate what they had done, you know, and I think that really, you know, helped him feel loved and accepted where he was. You know, for years I would read him the verses, the famous verses from Leviticus or from Romans or Corinthians, you know, just to make sure he knew he was in the wrong, and I think he was just very glad that that had changed.
He finally went for what love was, and so did you.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, this Mormon mother who said, you know, love people where they are, and she realized she couldn't do that. She couldn't do anything other than that with her own son.
Right. Well, and I've been around moms in my churches who have had to kind of go on the down low because their kids have come out. And, you know, I see that these young people have no option. They are pretty much told that God doesn't accept them, that they have to either live a life of celibacy, which, you know, I can believe that some people are called to that, but it's very difficult, or my brain just went off the rails.
Well, and we know celibacy doesn't work like in the Catholic Church with the priests,
right,
all the abuse.
And right, and it's not for everyone. I mean, there are, you know, Tim Gunn is one, a celebrity who is, he's not he's celibate by choice, and he's happy that way. But I don't think it's a, I think it's a very rare thing. And so for the church to come and say the only way that you can be acceptable to God as a gay person is to be celibate, mm-hmm. I think that's really, it's cutting people off from connection with other people. And I just don't see the right in that. I don't see how that's at all God's heart.
Well, you know, Amy, one of the things that Dr. Wilde shared with me that for him was the most damaging thing of the reparative therapy was the constant stating to, particularly adolescents, you will never be loved.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
that, for me, is we are born of love, and we are love, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah.
And with Exodus going out, I am glad to see that their profile is leaving, but there will still be people who, as you said, you know, they're sort of like attempting to reinvent themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also say there are more people who have awareness, and you yourself, you're a powerful voice.
Yes.
In your community. Yeah. And saying, look, and again, it's, Diana and I talk about this, everything happens one person at a time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. Well, and I'm a friendly person, and people find me very approachable. And when I can make them stop up short and say, realize, oh, this is a human being. This is not an us versus them. This is their heart, and make them start thinking, what if your 16-year-old son was online reading an article and they read all those comments about how awful gay people are, and he himself was struggling with that? You know, it just... I think when I can get a mother to think about that, another Christian mother to sit there and think, it stops them. And they realize, oh, wait, I have to do some more thinking. And that's really where I feel my place is just to get the conversation rolling and to stop this us versus them mentality going on.
Because we're not separate. That's,
no.
I think, the thing that I, you know, people have made us be separate via you're Democrat or Republican,
mm-hmm.
or you're Jewish or you're Christian, or you're Arab or you're a Jew, and
mm-hmm.
everything has been made to keep us separate, when in all actuality, we're all very, very, very much the same.
Yep.
And those of us who've been fortunate enough to travel, including in third world countries, can see that we are very much the same in many respects. We want love. We want acceptance. We want to be held and touched,
mm-hmm.
no matter what our income is. And,
yep.
Yeah. And, Amy, I think it's really impressive what you're doing. And as Lou said, one person at a time. You are so articulate, and you talked about talking to one Christian mother at a time. Do you think you might expand this and try to reach more people? Although maybe a first step is being on this program, since it's archived and you can send people to it and listen.
Well, it seems like I'm almost in a way getting outed, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
this card, because I still, you know, I keep a pretty low profile even on Facebook, and I have so many friends who are so conservative, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it's difficult. I mean, I think sometimes the people in the Christian community can be very, very difficult to talk to about these things. They can be very judgmental, which is unfortunate. That's really not how we're supposed to be. And I hate to even bring that up, but I don't think it's any secret, really. So,
mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
and it makes sense, Amy, because for myself, being on two major national councils with two former surgeon generals, and I'm the current vice chair of the first endowed chair in human sexuality in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do know is that the three areas where people typically go if they have a question relative to sexuality or relationship, but more so sexuality, they'll go to one of three places. They'll go to a therapist,
mm-hmm.
they'll go to a physician, or they'll go to someone of faith.
Yeah.
And neither of those three gets any in-depth training about sexual pleasure, sexual diversity, they don't.
Oh,
and
tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for Diana and myself, I'm a certified sex educator. She herself is a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, did you ever get any conversation growing up, you know, within a Christian environment on sexual health education and sexual pleasure?
Actually, I did.
Wow.
My household,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, my mother became a Christian when I was five. And so when my dad's a surgeon, and so we just had those books, you know, Where Do Babies Come From? And I think What's Happening to My Body? Or something like one of those 70s books that had diagrams. And so I was aware of sex from a very early age. I didn't get a whole lot of, I guess, freedom about it. My mom, in my formative years, she was going through a man-hating stage after the divorce, and so I didn't get much info about it being a great thing within a marriage. So that kind of thing I had to cultivate on my own, like probably through college. But even then, it wasn't all that healthy. With the Christian groups I was involved with, it was all about purity. So they didn't really talk about married sex very often. So I don't know. I just pick things up as I read. And but in my household, it's very open. I want to make sure that my girls have good context and healthy body images and know that their bodies are good and you know, are comfortable exploring themselves and things like that, because I certainly was not with that. I remember my mother kind of quashed that when I was a toddler. I remember those situations. But yeah.
You're a good example of taking what could be sort of negative role models and looking at it and saying, well, I want to do it differently.
Yeah.
And it sounds like with your daughters, you are doing it differently. And
yeah, I mean, my mother did a lot of good things, but I think I've done, you know, I took the good things my mother did and then the things that were negative and decided to take those back, you know, and to redeem them with my own kids.
And including your father's homosexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and congratulations on having a good relationship with him now, and you and your husband taking him out for dinner and celebrating his marriage that you hadn't heard about till his visit.
Yeah, I was kind of sad about that, but I think now he knows to you know, he can share things with me. He's not a very in-depth, touchy-feely kind of dad, but he's very fun. We have a good time when we're together.
Well, you've taken what's good from him and looked at some of the negatives that you had in your own heart, and you've changed it. Amy, you've been wonderful to call in. Thank you so much. I think you've added a lot to the conversation. Wouldn't you agree, Lou?
Absolutely. Now, Amy, if someone is their Christian and they want information that would resonate with them, do you have any websites or any place you might recommend? I mean, I know there's Dan Savage's things. I know other things, but something that...
Yeah.
You know,
it
for
has
a
the Christian
girlfriend
flavor.
Who just sort of sidles up to you and says, do you have any place you can send me?
Yes, there's actually a wonderful website. It's called gaychristian.net.
Mm-hmm. Gaychristian.net,
and it was started by a man, Jason Lee, and he wrote a book called Torn, which I believe every evangelical should read. It's it's a very thought-provoking book because he himself was raised in a really stable home. It dispels all of those theories that Christians like to blame homosexuality on, because he had none of those. You know, he had a great household growing up. He was a believer, and he ended up being gay. And so it's his story, and it's fascinating, and I think every Christian should read it because it was just great.
And it's written by Jason Lee.
Yeah, I think it's Jason. Is it Jason Lee or Brandon Lee?
Well, Brandon Lee is the one who unfortunately died as a result of a bad gun.
Yes, that's what. Okay, so it's Jason Lee.
Okay.
But the book is called Torn. You can get it on from Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah. Justin Lee, his book just came up on my screen. I am so sorry about that. Motherhood.
Well, you know what? Got it.
Justin Lee.
Yes.
And when I do the summary for this program today, I'm going to mention that.
Oh, that'd be great. It's a really lovely site. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Amy, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for including me. I'm honored.
Oh, thank you, Amy.
Our pleasure.
You're just wonderful.
Bye-bye.
Right, bye. Bye now.
So,
There's even another article today on Huffington Post of another gentleman who 12 years ago went through conversion therapy here in Pasadena and the impact on it, on him. And that, and here's the thing, to me, this is about, you. Again, as I say, we don't choose this. You do not choose this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've covered our area there.
Well, no, we have, and I thought it might be kind of fun in the last few minutes to switch over to Shades of Gray, and because you mentioned, and well you know, I'm going to, of course, have you back, and I'll talk off the air because it needs to be sooner as opposed to later, and then I'm going to be on your radio show, I guess, toward the end of
July.
July, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we usually do that.
Right.
But Shades of Gray, you mentioned to me that
There's a woman.
A woman who's
yes.
been hired to be the director for
right.
the movie.
Now, here's the one thing that I love, the fact that it is a woman who is going to be directing. She also is a woman who is married to a man who is much younger than she is,
mm-hmm.
much, and they have, I believe it's 2 children.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there is a different nuanced delivery of this story that will come from a woman than coming from a man, because the thread of the story is driven by the woman. It's not
Absolutely.
Driven by a man.
That's
and it's
right.
driven by a woman who has, you know, and here's the thing. For the majority of people, whether you liked the trilogy or you did not, here's my statement about it. It's a love story about 2 people who have no idea how to be in a relationship. But they are both willing to try anything to stay together. They don't understand love, but they are madly, madly in love.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any context. She has no context of sexuality. He has a much greater idea. And people say, oh, no one who's 22, you know, is a virgin. Sure they are. Are you out of your mind? And then they're saying women are not highly orgasmic. Well, Diana, your family can attest to the fact that women are highly orgasmic.
How'd you know that?
Because you told me.
Oh, that's right.
You told me about your grandmother.
Well, and then the latest news is that my mother at 91 has a new boyfriend after being widowed 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she's much more cheerful now that she's sexual again.
I love that. So what I like about the books, 50 Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
is that they've opened up a lot of different conversations for people.
Absolutely.
I was presenting in Chennai, India, in February.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that trilogy was very big there. Then I was in, also here in the U.S. and Canada, because then I presented here. And I presented St. Louis and Austin. Then I went to all over the Far East, and Singapore, Jakarta, Malaysia, Hong Kong, and Manila. And I have to tell you, all of those areas have an interest, and this book was a huge hit there. Because what it is it gives more of the ideas or an expression of what a couple would do, and this man is crazy about her. What it also did is it allowed people to talk about something that wasn't about their own experiences, which is when people are most likely to, you know, say, oh, well, I heard about blah, blah, blah. If they don't have to talk about themselves, they'll have much more open conversations about sexuality. You and I know that.
Yes, and what I like about the trilogy, 50 Shades, is that these stories focus on female desire and what's in it for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of that in mainstream culture. So I think it resonated with lots and lots of women for that reason, that they've said that they've learned the most about what sex could be for them from erotica novels.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you – there's a book A Billion Wicked Thoughts, and
mm-hmm.
it's by 2 individuals who are statisticians. And what they looked at
mm-hmm.
was sites, you know, porn sites, adult sites, searching. And they looked at what were the men looking for, and the men were looking for the, you know, thank you, you know, get it in, get it out, yippee, I'm done. But the women were looking more for something that had more of the mental seduction and more
mm-hmm.
of something that involved the feeling part of it. And I don't know why we have to have a statistician tell women that women have to have their brain engaged before their body follows, but somehow we have to have that happen, and then it's like validates that women have what women have always known. But what I like...
But that's really true, isn't it?
It is. It's really true. But it's like,
because
please.
Women tend to be so good at multitasking during sex, which absolutely can derail the passion.
Everything.
And because it's, you have the best time sexually when you're in the moment and letting go and not being inhibited and all of those things.
Exactly. So what I liked about 50 Shades, and I like that it's a woman doing this. Now, again, we're going to have, you know, additional discussions about, you know, who's going to be playing the role, how is it written, is it true to the story. It also is something that has impacted dramatically the adult novelty industry.
Yes, and you have always been, and we've had discussions before, even going back to when I had a show in Hawaii and you were on that show, but we've had about how this S&M flavored love story gives a big boost to sales of sex toys.
Well, here's the thing. In 50 Shades of Grey, there is not one true BDSM scene. There is not one. And anyone who is in the kink world, truly, they're a little ticked about this story and people thinking that it's accurate. Here's the other thing. He really is not, there was really not a true scene. She's not a submissive. She was not submissive, ever. This was, as she called it, their, you know, kinky, you know, she called it their kinky fuckery is what she called it.
Yeah.
And that is what it was, but she was the one that initiated. So anytime there was a major blow up, it was because of something she initiated. So
that's true. That's such a good point.
And I have 120 pages of notes that I took from that trilogy because to me it's important as an educator that I know through my own eyes. Remember what I said about Dr. Beverly Whipple?
Yes.
You've got to see it yourself so you know how it's impacting people. It was important for me to see what everyone else was seeing. Now,
why don't you just briefly tell our listeners who Beverly Whipple is?
Dr. Beverly Whipple is one of the icons in our field. She, along with Lattis Cannon Perry, named the G-spot in deference to Dr. Ernst Greifenberg, who was a German physician who first noticed that tissue differentiation site on the front wall, the belly button's front wall of women's vaginal vaults. Now, the G-spot is not in the vaginal vault. It is above it. But Dr. Whipple is the one who has studied that and studied orgasm and studied female ejaculation and studied spinal cord injury and the ability of the vagus nerve to transmit orgasmic sensation from a woman who has had a full spinal cord severance. So it's literally that vagus nerve is outside of the spinal cord. She has been the head and the president of every single one of the organizations, peer organizations in the field of sexuality. And she's previously professor emerita from Rutgers University, and her PhD is in the area of nursing.
And she really, I miss her at our conferences.
Yeah, I mean,
she doesn't come as much anymore.
No, she has a number of, you know, things and, you know, that have come up. But I also want to just touch on two more things that are in the news today.
Okay,
today.
Really quickly, because we have to stop like in
right.
1 minute before the top of the hour.
Transgender girl who was banned from a bathroom.
That's so interesting, yes.
And that was something this little girl has identified as being a girl, born male, but identified as a girl since 18 months. Throughout her schooling, through everything, she has identified as a girl. And the school was trying to tell her, no, you're going to have to be using a school or the teacher's bathroom or the boy's bathroom. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the grandfather of a child who went to this school who was the one that caused all this fluff.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother
mm-hmm.
came forward, and this is a mom who has five kids, two, you know, three of whom are triplets, and Koi is one of them. And they came back and they said, no, they will be allowed to use the gender neutral bathrooms on the same floor as the first grade classroom. I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's a grade one student, and anyone who wants to read anything about children who are trans and know it, check out Mark Schoen's amazing film, and you will see these children saying, well, I knew. I just knew.
Yes, his film is amazing. It's called Trans.
Right, and it's just, and the last one is this 20-week abortion ban that's in Texas right now. There is
Real quick, Lou.
State representative who's doing a filibuster on this, she has to be on her feet for 13 hours.
13 hours. It's amazing. Lou, once again, you've been a fascinating, wonderful guest. I need to tell the listeners that there'll be a repeat program next week because I'm on vacation, but the following week, Candida Royale will be on, and we're going to be talking about sexuality and cancer.
Uh-huh.
And we're not talking enough about this very important subject, so that should be good. Lou, you're wonderful.
Thank you, my dear.
I'm so glad you were on the program today. Thank you.
My pleasure, sweetie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.